Welcome to Speed Vector, the podcast dedicated to the art, risk, and obsession of speed flying. I'm your host, Victor Garcia, speed flyer, skydiver, cinematographer, Navy veteran, and full-time gravity junkie. Every week, we dive into the lines we fly, the gear we trust, and the stories that push us past the ridge and into the void. Whether you're just learning to launch or chasing the perfect line, this is where speed flyers come to connect, learn, and stoke the fire. This is Speed Vector. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Speed Vector podcast. This is Victor. What's your Vector, Victor? I'm your host, founder. Stoke meter is pegged to 10,000. This is episode 2, all about progression, both from Ushua's point of view and then from my point of view in general. So Ushua recently-ish came out with specific speed fly ratings. It's S0 to S4. I'm just going to hit the wave tops with this, guys, because it's very wordy, and I just don't feel like reading a PDF file to you. I will say the Ushua website is not super user-friendly. If you're not a member, you don't even get access, but you can't just like get on there and pay a membership fee. Which is, I think, like $150 or something, which is pretty standard with skydiving and paragliding and all that. You know, obviously Ushua is paragliding and speed flying and hang gliding, whereas skydiving is the USPA, very similar. But with that being said, you can't go on there, pay $150, and then get access to all this information. You have to get on there, pay your $150, and then get an instructor to basically certify that you exist and that you are in fact a student of the game, and then they basically send that to Ushua, and then Ushua gives you permission to look at the stuff, which I find to be a little ridiculous. I'm not here to trash Ushua, although I might a little bit, or it might sound like I am, only because I want the sport of speed flying to grow in a healthy way with the least amount of obstacles. I feel like that's a good place to start. Someone sees someone speed flying or is interested in it, maybe sees it on YouTube or TikTok or Instagram or whatever your consumption of this sport is or maybe. And then you decide you want to support Ushua because you want to learn more about this sport and you have relatively deep pockets and you spend $150 for information. The thing is that the site doesn't teach you anything. It just tells you what you need to get the stuff, like to get the rating or to get the license. It doesn't say this is how you reverse launch a paraglider or this is how you forward launch a speed wing. It doesn't go into any of that. This is not like you come here to learn the stuff and study this. No, that's totally separate. That is something that the instructor probably pays for somehow separately and then gives you access to that. Or you as the student probably pay for it. I don't remember. I don't really know, to be honest. I apologize. I should know this. I don't. Moving on. So the reason I wanted to talk about Ushua rating system first is because it is really hard to find. Like, I literally looked for this for a long time. I don't know if it just didn't exist, and then it all of a sudden existed, and I went on there and found it. Or it's just really hard to find. Either way, you basically go on to Ushua's website, and you find some random link in a very odd place that takes you to a PDF file that has every single license and specialty rating that you can get through Ushua, through an instructor, but via Ushua on this one document. I don't know how many pages it is, but it's like really long. Speed flying is towards the bottom. I'd say it's about I don't know, 2/3 or maybe 3/4 the way down. And it pretty much in a very wordy but nondescript way tells you kind of like the checks you have to put in boxes. It gives you the boxes that you have to check to get these things, but it's got to be through a certified instructor. That's a whole other topic I will probably touch on later, because that is also, there's some nuance and I don't know. I don't want to bad mouth anything or anyone, but it's nuancy and it's a bit of a monopoly in terms of who can do it and where they are and whatever. It's not like this in Europe, by the way. It is totally different. This is just in the US. I cut them some slack because it is a new sport, but there's just like some weird gatekeeping at the top that makes all of this more difficult. But that's neither here nor there. So I'm just going to run through a couple bullets for S0 to S4. And then I'm going to talk about a whole other side of progression that is the reason I wanted to get on this and make this podcast to begin with. So just bear with me. So the Ushba S rating progression is this. You start as an S0. You are nothing. You are new. You're a student. You are here to learn. You're not nothing. I'm just kidding. You're rad because you want to be a part of this awesome sport. And you want to help it grow. And you're doing it the right way by getting proper instruction. I talked about this in the last episode. Get proper instruction. It will save your life. It will also save the sport. And it will save other people being able to do the sport in certain places. And it will probably help the sport grow. So get proper instruction. Start as an S0. You are a student speed flyer. And it says in, I don't think it's bolded, but it is very kind of a standalone statement. Tandems are not permitted, meaning, when you learn to skydive or you learn to hang glide or you learn to paraglide, you're going to do a tandem first. I think hang gliding, you do like a bunch of them, which makes total sense. Paragliding, I mean, you can do as many as you want, but I think you just have to do one. And then skydiving is a requirement. I think, I don't know if it still is, but it was, you had to do one tandem before you could then move on to your second jump, which would be your first jump with your own rig. In speed flying, there is no such thing as that in the eyes of Ushba, even though there are tandem speed wings out there and there are a handful of people that do them. I don't know what their ratings are. I'm assuming they're Sky God Ninja Turtles, so they probably have S4 and they're probably tandem pilots in the paragliding world. So it translates just a little bit faster. So anyway, S0, you're a student. S1, you are still a student. Quick general description of this is, according to Ushba, this is their words, a beginner speed flying pilot has the knowledge and basic skill necessary to fly and practice under direct instructor supervision and within significant operating limitations. Now, cool. The operating limitations is like a 2 pages long, so I'm not going to read that, but essentially the required witness tasks and witnessed by the instructor tasks is you have to attend and complete a basic ground school. You have to lay out and pre-flight your wing, trim settings, harness, and reserve when applicable. If you run a reserve, that's cool. I feel like most of us don't just because we're not that far off the ground. Although I think I might get one. It's a good idea. I've seen it save people's lives from like 30 feet off the deck. So, it could be cool. I might wish I had it someday and don't, or be thankful I have it someday and, you know, get to use it. Hopefully not. The third bullet point is that you demonstrate the ability to comfortably run and sprint for 30 yards. I wonder with that one if instructors are actually like being like, okay, just want to make sure you can run. So let's have you line up on this line and run 30 yards to this line. Like, I don't think that's how that goes. It's probably just like a use your best discretion. You know, it'd be a little ridiculous. Maybe someday it might be more regimented and you might have to run 30 yards, like sprint 30 yards. We'll see. Time will tell. The last bullet point I want to go over with this is that you have to demonstrate or explain proper and effective PLF or parachute landing fall technique and when it would be appropriate. If you don't know what a PLF is, YouTube that. It might save your legs and your back and your face and everything else. And then the final thing is you must pass the Ushpa Beginner Speed Flying S1 written exam. Boom. On to S2. General description. The pilot has the knowledge and skill to fly well-established entry-level sights in mild to moderate flying conditions and to judge when the sight and conditions are within the pilot's skill, knowledge, and experience level. Pretty straightforward. You're still a student-ish. I would say you might be a student, you know. You might be done. Actually, I think at S2, you're good to do it on your own. You can do it on your own if you wanted sooner. I mean, you don't have to do any of this, but like I said, it's smart to do this. So I believe as an S2, you're good to go. Could also be instructor discretion. Couple bullet points. You basically have to attend a ground school covering the glider. So this is S2 is really like S1 to me, because you have to attend a ground school covering the glider, rules of flight, meteorology, and applicable FARs, which is an FAA thing. Federal Aviation Regulations is what FAR stands for, F-A-R. You must have logged a total of at least 50 flights on a speed wing. See, that's weird, because the attending a ground school part, I thought that was a part of S1, because that is a part of most curriculum. Apparently, you can get away with it and be an S1, not have attended a ground school. I don't really understand that. That's usually where most programs start. They start with a ground school, either a half day or a full day. Maybe they, you know, the more cowboy ones, maybe they go do a flight or two, and then, or not, maybe not a flight. Maybe they go to a field with some, you know, relatively limited wind, light wind, and do some ground handling or no wind, you know, and just practice getting familiarized with the wing. And then they do the ground school. I'm not really sure. I think it just depends on the instructor and the program at which they are implementing. So yeah, you got to log 50 flights on a speed wing from a minimum of 2 different launch locations. That's important. If you have like a 100-foot vert hill in your backyard and you launch that 50 times, that doesn't count. It's got to be 2 different launch locations. I don't know how specific they get into that. I think they dive into that deeper. I know as you get through the progression, and we might actually cover this in these bullet points, but it's got to be like a certain distance from each other, like a mile or 2 miles apart or something. It's like pretty weirdly specific, but anyway, you got to be... So basically, with a minimum of 2 directional changes of 90 degrees or more on each flight. So each of those 50 flights, or more, I guess, you have to have a minimum of 2 90-degree turns and a heading change of at least 45 degrees from straight into wind. Okay, so it says 90, but it also says like you can half that. You can do a 45-degree turn from straight into the wind. That counts as a directional change. That seems a bit odd. Either you have to do a 90, or actually you can just do a 45 and it's fine. 20 of those 50 flights must include a minimum of 2 linked turns initiated with weight shift with a smooth return back to stable glide. So you basically have to do a couple of S turns on 20 of the 50 flights. Flight altitude needs to be adequate height to allow for proper launch, transition into normal flight, a minimum of 2 turns, and appropriate setup for landing. Seems important. And you have to previously fulfill requirements of Ushpa Beginner Speed Flight S1. So I guess if you show up to a speed fly school, and you're like, hey, look at my sweet logbook in this binder. I've got 52 flights. Give me my S2 rating. Well, they're going to make sure that you fulfill the requirements of S1, which are a lot more like ground school, nuancey, before they can do it. And then you also have to pass the S2 exam. I won't talk about the exams in this. I hope they're being rewritten. There's been some issues. Anyway. Moving on to S3, general description. Pilot has knowledge, skill to fly technically demanding sights at a variety of altitudes and climates, and to judge when the sight and conditions are within pilot's skill, knowledge, and experience level. Pretty straightforward. From here on out, I'm just going to touch the wave tops of like the numbers and stuff because it gets really detailed. Like I like literally like S1, S2, like all of them, they all have like 2 pages worth of stuff. It's all bullet points. It's a PDF file. It's boring. They need to make it cooler. But anyway, here we are. We're reading a PDF file on the internet. So you got to have 250 flights in varied conditions at a minimum of 5 sites that are more than 1 mile apart. There's that part I was talking about. More than 1 mile apart, 5 different sites for S3. Must have at least 3 flights and a minimum of 3 different speed wings. So you got to freaking dish out some cash, man. You got to get yourself 3 different speed wings. And you got to have 250 flights. If you're a gear junkie, this is no problem because you probably have like 8 of them and you just like cycle through them based on the conditions. That's kind of what I do. I don't have 8 though. Maybe someday, not too far off. You got to log a minimum of 80 flying days. So you can't do 250 flights in 30 days. Like that doesn't count. You got to have a little bit more time in the saddle. Got to have a few more sleeps, let's say. Let all that knowledge and experience sink into your brain. You got to have previously fulfilled the requirements of USPA S2 speed flying rating, and you must pass the S3 written exam. It's an intermediate speed flyer. S4, all right, now we're getting into the juice of this. This is like, you know, this is like your D license in skydiving. It's as high as you can go in terms of the S rating. But I mean, it's, you know, it actually kind of mirrors the D license, and you'll see why here in a minute. Let's get into this. The pilot has the knowledge, skill, and experience level to safely pioneer new previously unflown speed flying sites and is adequate on a broad range of speed wings, sizes, wing loadings, and aspect ratios. You know, just different wings. They're all different. It can't be less than 1 year, but also can't be more than 5 years. You have to log 700 or more flights at 10 or more locations that are more than 1 mile apart. 1 mile apart. Excuse me. Sometimes I pronounce mile mile to be funny. Didn't want you guys to think I couldn't read. So you got to have 500 flights and a minimum of 1,000 vertical descent for each flight. Sorry for you folks that like 600-foot flights. That's me, my favorite place to fly is 600 vert. Dang it. Yeah, so 500 of those 700 must be 1,000 vert. You have to have at least 20 flights and a minimum of 5 different speed wing canopies. So you got to have 5 wings. 5. And I think you have to have 20 on each of those. I don't think you can do like a flight on one and then like 5 flights and do 5 different wings, and then your 6th wing is like the one that you have 700 flights on. Like, I don't think that's how it works. You got to log a minimum of 175 flying days. So using a variety of wind apps and forecasting services, demonstrate expert level weather forecasting for 5 different flying sites that are selected by the instructor. That seems kind of odd, but they I guess that's a part of it. I get that. Sorry, dogs barking once again. It wouldn't be a day that ends in Y if the dogs weren't barking in the background. Just saying, you guys will catch on. Let's see. You have previously fulfilled the USPA Intermediate S3 rating, and you must go pass the S4 written exam. Sweet. That's all really boring. I think I just kind of fell asleep whilst reading that for the last like 15 minutes. So really what I wanted to get into with this is that the rating system is important. But what's more important is gaining experience and knowledge through repetition. Okay. So this thing about, you know, 5 different speed wings and 15 different sites on, you know, 175 days and more than 1,000 vert for 100 flights, you know, and more than 1,000 vert for 500 flights. Like, that's cool. Like, I get that, right? I understand that, but I don't think that should be your focus. If your goal is to be an S4 pilot the day you hit 700 flights, I think that it could work, but it probably won't. And here's why. So I'm going to tell you a quick story because it will make this make more sense. At 29 flights, okay, 29 speed flights, I was with my friend who was also my instructor, who's now a flying partner of mine that I fly with all the time and who I love. Like, he's my homie, Josh. He'll be on the show probably pretty soon. And I'm just, before I even get into the story, this was not Josh's fault, okay, at all. Like, this was my call. He left it up to me. I was a S2 or whatever, you know, 29 flights. I was confident. I came from skydiving where I had hundreds and hundreds of flights, like, of skydives, rather. So canopy flights correlate to that unless, you know, it doesn't end well. I was confident, you know. But I was also unsure of myself because it's kind of freaking scary when you're launching at a scary launch. Well, so we go up to this launch. It's a cliff launch. The wind's kind of crossed up. This launch has walls on both sides of it that are parallel with the launch. It's a turf launch, but there are walls on both sides. Basically, you know, it's just a, just like a cutout in a mountain, essentially, but pretty tight, you know. And my 29th flight, I'm on a 15 meter, what was I on? It was a Spitfire 2 Plus. So swing Spitfire 2 Plus, which is, you know, it's a speed riding wing. It's steep. It's pretty steep, in terms of how it's trimmed. And it's kind of a tough wing to launch, just with running because it's trimmed steep. You got to run a little faster. It's built to kind of stay low to the ground so that you can ski, right? That's how it's designed. But this was a 15 meter. And, you know, my all up weight's like 175, 180. So the wing loading's light. So it actually worked, right? But anyway, the wind's coming straight up. It's really light. It's like 3 to 5 knots. Get the wing up, sprint, do my thing. I get off the launch fine. I fly down, you know, 2,000 feet and land the LZ. Cool. It's like, hey, you want to do it again? I was like, sure. I was super confident. So before that one, I was nervous, right? Because I'm like, I've never cliff launched before. It's a T turf launch, right? So you've got like the T on top, you can lay out your wing, and then like the turf extends downward. It rolls off. There's a little bit of a grass patch, and then it drops about 20 feet straight down into like mixed rock and grass. Another like 100 yards or so, you know, 200 yards. It drops down like significantly, like, I don't know, a couple hundred foot cliff straight up vertical. So visually the sight picture is quite scary. It's heady, you know, it's like, oh man, like I gotta like do this thing. I gotta like launch this speed wing before I fall off this cliff. And it's no different than launching on a launch that's sand or that's grass. It's just like a rolling hill, you know, it's no different than kiting your wing on the ground and doing practice launches on flat ground, but it feels different because it looks different, but really it's not any different. It shouldn't feel different, but it looks different, making you, me, think that it is in fact different when it's not. I digress. We go back up there, right? This is flight number 3030. And the wind shifted just a couple of degrees right. So now it's a right to left crosswind. I'm still in that like weird, you know, cut out in the mountain thing that's about 25 feet wide or whatever, 40 feet wide. It's fairly tight, you know. I mean, your wing fits in there fine. Like full-size paragliders fit in there fine. It's probably a little wider than that, but anyway, it does have an effect on the wind. It creates mechanical turbulence if it's not coming straight into that, which is what happened. So being that I had 30 flights, 30 previous launches, right? I was not prepared in a muscle memory fashion to make quick corrections to the wing doing stuff while I'm sprinting down a turf hill towards a cliff, right? I wasn't there yet. This isn't Josh. This is not his fault. It's not him. It wasn't on him. It was on me because I was confident. I'm like, I can do this. Like, I just did it, you know? Like, I'm good at this. Like, I'm the man. I got 30 speed flights. Like, no, dude, you're dumb. Like, if you're not feeling it, don't go. Just freaking hike down, or we took a side-by-side up there. Just drive down. Go back down to the launch that you're comfortable with. That's super chill. That isn't going to mess you up. Well, anyway, I get the wing up. I start running. I get closer to the to where the wall ends, which is like before the lip. So you like pass this threshold and you have like 2 more seconds before you're like probably airborne, hopefully, right? That's like the goal. Come around this lip and I get past the lip rather, and the wind just like grabs like the left side of my wing and just slightly dips it down to the left, which is like so common. Like it happens all the time. And had I had more reps, I'd have just moved my body to the left, like started running diagonally left just a little bit, and I would have given just a smidge more right brake. Canopy comes right back overhead and you're flying. Well, I had 30 flights, right? So in my head, I know to do that, right? But I don't have the muscle memory down. I don't have that feel. I'm not like ready to do that without thinking about it, right? So anyway, wingtip dips. I do get off the ground, but now I'm making like a left diving turn. And I bounce off of the edge of the cliff, like with my butt. And I just dive straight into the rocks. Like I fly down 15, 20 feet and just land in the rocks. Like on my, I like beached myself on a rock. Like if you can imagine, I like racked myself. I like straddled a rock. And like, I was super bruised up. I was pretty sore for a few days. Didn't break anything, thankfully. The wing was okay. I had knee pads on, thank God. I'm still wearing them to this day. And that totally saved me. Literally, like, guys, Josh and this other guy came running down, made sure I was cool, make sure I was, like, alive, you know, because you can't really see over this edge, so it just looked like I just fell off into just the abyss, because I basically did. Thank God it was only 20 feet. Picked my wing up, hiked back up, got inside by side, drove down to the other launch. I did, like, one or two more laps on, like, the lower like ridge launch that's like, you know, sand and super forgiving and lots of space, no cliff. And I was okay. My point in saying all this is that I did that at 30 flights. I didn't go back up to that launch until I had over 300 flights. And it wasn't because I wasn't ready to do it at like 60 flights or 160 flights or 200 flights, or, you know, 300, whatever, at like just a bit over 300. I think it was like 305. I go back up there. On a 9 meter wing now, like I am like well beyond a 15 meter. Like I'm not a beginner anymore at this point. I'm flying a 9 meter confident. I'm flying in terrain. I'm swooping. I'm doing all this stuff. I'm being responsible, but like I'm able to do this. I'm ground handling like a wizard. Not really. I'm working on it. But anyway, I go up there. It's cross, you know, just slightly. And there's a video, Josh takes a video of me launching, and the same thing happens, except instead of me not knowing how to correct that error, it's not even an error, just correct that, like, the wing reacting to, like, a different wind direction, instead of getting, like, bounced off the freaking lip, I just moved a little to the left and gave some right break as I'm sprinting. And then, like, 1 second later, less, I am in the air. And then 3 seconds later, I've got my freaking trim open and I'm flying in the terrain, basically. I mean, I wasn't, you know, I was just stoked, whatever. That, my point is that you should put yourself out there and try things that are difficult in the sport, but you shouldn't do it irresponsibly. And I feel, like I said, not Josh's issue, not his problem, not his fault, but I feel that I was irresponsible by thinking that I was ready to do a technical cliff launch at 30 flights. Okay, so another story about Josh. I promise you I'm not ragging on Josh. He's a good friend. This is not his fault. He's a really good instructor. He's got a really good head on his shoulders. He makes good decisions. His philosophy, from my point of view, I haven't heard him say this, but from my perspective, his philosophy is he can have 99 reasons to fly, and all it takes is one reason for him to not. And I appreciate that, because that's a safe pilot. That's a pilot that's going to be doing this into his old age. And even more importantly, arguably, that's a pilot that's going to pass that wisdom and philosophy and knowledge on to people that are just getting into the sport, so that they can help grow the sport and get future generations in it. And then we have a blossoming sport. That is what the sport needs. But anyway, like a month ago, I am there in the same place and I'm doing repeats on the ridge, which is 600 vertical feet on a 9 meter speed wing. It's about 25 seconds long, like especially if I'm flying aggressively, but I can launch, you know, like you have to launch. So I've got to, like, you know, you got to be on it. And I can fly in terrain and I can make some, you know, turns, and then I can do like a 90 or like 100 degree turn and swoop. And then I can hike back up in 15 minutes and do it again. Like I can get, you know, 10 to 12 laps in that in like 4 hours. Like That's what I like to do. But so anyway, Josh pulls up in the side-by-side with this guy I didn't know, and he was like, hey, are you going for quality today or quantity? Now, excuse me, when he said quality or quantity, he wasn't referring to he wasn't referring to what I was doing as being a waste of time. He was referring to a previous conversation we had, which was, I need 500 freaking flights over 1,000 vert. I don't have 500 flights over 1,000 vert because I love this specific site. It's Airport Ridge in Chelan at Airsport Chelan. It's iconic and it's super fun and you can just lap it, like I said. Well, the guy that he was with, older guy, did not understand that. He didn't know the context. The context was like, hey, Vic, are you trying to get as many laps in as possible that you can today? Or do you want to go get a 1,000-plus vert lap to build towards this 500 of a minimum of 1,000 vertical? And my response was quantity. This gentleman chimes in and says, that's dumb. You should always... I don't know if he said that's dumb, but it was the attitude and the way it came across. Like I said, I don't know this guy. He could just, that could just be how he talks, right? I'll give him the benefit of the doubt and just say that. But basically, he mirrored what I said by saying, oh, like, that's dumb. You should always take quality flights over quantity. And I didn't say anything because, quite frankly, I didn't really care. But I was thinking about that, and I still am, because here I am talking about it like a month later. Being like, what about doing reps on a, like a legit launch, you know, with like terrain and a, like a really nice LZ to swoop is not quality. What about that isn't? How about I do 1,000 laps on Airport Ridge, and then when I go up, you know, when I go to Switzerland or I go to like Chamonix or something, and I'm on top of Mont Blanc and I'm going to foot launch into like crevasse land where it's like a mandatory, like you have to make this launch or you are going to die scenario. And I have so many launches that I'm so confident in it that I can just do it. I don't have to think about it. If the conditions are right and my wing isn't messed up, which it's not going to be because I'm not going to launch if either of those two things are not, you know, correct. And I'm going to be fine, you know, because I'm going to make the right decision. And I know what I'm doing because I've done it so many times. Do I want it to take me 5 years, you know, to get to the point where I'm at that? Or do I want to do that in 2.5? I want to do it in 2.5 because it doesn't take anything away from me. It's not like, hey, do you want to ground handle today or do you want to go do Airport Ridge laps? I'm like, honestly, I love ground handling. It's super fun. But yeah, if the ridge is working, I'm going to go to the ridge because I want to get laps. I want to build numbers. I want to build experience. It's not about the number. It's about the experience that comes with the number. Okay? So in this sport, I'm going to wrap it up with this because it's been 30 minutes and I'm rambling. Reps matter a lot. It's if you're coming from skydiving or you're coming from some sport that is very physical, it's a muscle memory thing. Like you can read about some sports and like theorize and implement those theories and it'll take you far. In speed flying, I've found that it's muscle. It's a feeling. It's like, you know when your wing is a few degrees off to the left when you're launching because you felt it 1,000 times. And you know how to correct it without thinking about it because, quite frankly, you don't have time to think about it. You don't have time to look up at it. You know, I mean, yeah, look up and make sure your lines are good, but that's before you start sprinting. I'm talking about when you are, like, legitimately committed to the launch and you are sprinting and you are past the point of stopping. Like a mandatory launch. Like, you're already there. You're about to take flight whether you want to or not at this point. That's not the time to look up at your wing to see where it's at. Even out of your peripherals, not the time. Period. You need to be looking straight ahead in a torpedo position. You know, you can't look up when you are in the correct launching position without like turning your head, or if you have like a really flexible neck, you might be able to. Good on you if you do have that skill, because I do not. I cannot be in the proper body position launching and look up in my wing. It is impossible. I have to stand up straight, which is now not a proper launching technique, and look up, which is going to screw my complete, it's going to completely screw up my launch, right? So just get quality reps with a lot of quantity. Like, do a large amount of quality reps, a lot, in a familiar site. I don't care if it's the same site. Get 1,000 speed flights in the same place, in the same kind of weather. I don't care. I think that these numbers are arbitrary. I think it is a minimum. Nothing says that you have to be an S4 at 700 flights. Nothing. You could be an S2 at 700 flights. It doesn't matter. Like, pay your OOSHPA dues, get the proper training, get the proper equipment, and then once you have the knowledge, commit that knowledge to muscle memory by getting reps. Period. That's all I've got for today, guys. Thanks for tuning in. Please go to YouTube, look up Speed Vector, subscribe if you like, and Instagram is speed_vector. Give it a follow, please. And yeah, really enjoying this so far. Hope you guys are too. Gonna eventually set up a Q&A kind of platform, like a way that you can send me questions, and I'll dedicate an episode here or there to answering them. Let's see. I'm gonna have an episode on the GoFlare Global line, which I have recently been flying quite a bit. I'm also going to start having guests on here pretty soon. Just getting it all dialed. The sound quality hopefully is better this time. I've actually got proper equipment that I already had, but it wasn't set up last time. So anyway, now we're set and we're rolling. So hope you guys enjoyed this. Thanks so much for being here, and I will see you guys on the flip side. Speed Vector out. Oh,